when you were in the forest. You didn't look me in the eye. The wrens looked like angels. The dove made you cry. I have brown trap feathers and blend in with the trees. I wish I was special, so fucking special. But I'm a creeper, I'm a brown widow. Why don't you look over here? Do I belong here?
Hello, and welcome to Dirty Bird Podcast, a podcast that's serious about birds, but nothing else. In each episode, I pick an individual bird species and tell you everything you need to know about it. This episode, as you've probably figured out from my dumb little intro song, is about the brown creeper. This bird is also known as the American creeper, along with a bunch of other, colloquial and regional names, Virginia creeper or Rocky Mountain creeper, things like that. So the reason why I did that, Radiohead parody there in the beginning is, of course, creeper kind of lends itself. It's kind of a funny name. But also, these birds are kind of underappreciated, both by birders in the field. They're, as we'll talk about, brown little birds that blend in with the trees. They're kind of hard to see. And, the woodpeckers with their bright red coloring and the warblers, they always get a lot of attention. I think, everyone's like, oh, it's just a brown creeper. No one's like really excited to see it. And then also in research too, there really, isn't a ton about these birds. So this episode will probably be a little bit on the shorter side. So poor little brown creeper, he's a little underappreciated. He feels a bit like a weirdo in the bird world. But I guess this is a testament to just how evolutionary successful it is, It is able to camouflage and remain hidden very well. Thank you so much to Cass for suggesting this episode. Cass is a great friend of the show. I did one of my Icelandic bird episodes with them, and it was a blast. Be sure to check out that episode. And be sure to write in, dirtybirdpodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Instagram at dirtybirdpodcast. I got a YouTube channel too. And let me know what birds you would like me to cover. I'm recording right now from my secret spot in First Landing State Park. It is a beautiful April morning. There's lots of bird noise. Hopefully we pick up some of it close to the mic. There's also some frogs. Maybe, the elusive fox will make an appearance. Haven't seen him in a while. This may be the last episode I record out here in First Landing. There's a lot going on in my life right now. There may be a little hiatus in Dirty Bird Podcast, but the good news is that when I return, I'll be recording from beautiful, silent West Virginia. Won't have to deal with those jets anymore. But before I begin the show, I do want to give a couple shout-outs to people who have written in. The first one goes to Mike, who sent me a message on Instagram. He said, "Been a listener for a few weeks. I am a lifelong birder, and these podcasts are informative and entertaining. My favorite so far has been the Song Sparrow episode. I grew up in North Dakota, and back in the 1970s, it was called the Dakota Song Sparrow. Thanks for your fine work on the avifauna." Thanks for that, Mike. I really love that Song Sparrow episode. I checked that out. A ballad about song sparrows. It's super cool. Each region kind of has their own tune that the song sparrows sing. I got a lot of feedback on my waxwing episode, which was awesome. I really liked doing that episode. Thanks to Diana and David, who both wrote in, saying they liked it. David recommended I go ahead and do that Hawaiian bird episode, which I've been talking about for a while. I did some recording when I was out in Kauai. I'm definitely planning on that. One final shout out, and also a great way to kick off this Brown Creeper episode, is Dirty Birds superfan Jay Pogo left a voice memo talking all about his experience with Brown Creepers.
Yeah, morning, baby.
Morning, baby.
A little dirty bird told me you were about to do a podcast about one of my twins, Brown Creeper. I say twins, I'll come back to that. I love correlating birds, right, with things. Northern mockingbird, raptor, dinosaurs, a little chickadee, aww, black metal artist from Sweden. Brown creeper, the first time I've ever got introduced to it, it was a new bird. I go home, look it up on the app. They're not paying us, so I'm not going to say which app. And I go, I chuckled. I was like, no way, my twin. Not to say that I'm proud of it, but I've been called Brown Creeper myself. Later, baby. Peace.
Thanks, Jay Bogo. Hilarious as always. That's so funny. Yeah, I mean, Brown Creeper, immediately you're like, what? That's a real bird name? Sounds kind of mean. And yeah, definitely when I look at chickadees too, that like black eye mask they have, you know, it always makes me think kind of like football players, you know, with that around them, or like little bandits or something. But yes, I can see like a Norwegian heavy metal band too. All right, so let's go in talking about brown creepers. So these are very small birds. They're only about the size of a sparrow. Their plumage is composed of browns, blacks, grays. They also have some cream colors speckled in there too. And this all helps them blend in with tree bark. You seldom see their underside. Usually, you know, they're up against the tree, so you don't really see their bellies. But if you do, it's all white. Their bills are long and down-curved, like that of a wren. And they are extremely slender, perfect for getting into, you know, little crevices and bark. The males have longer bills than the females. This is actually true all across the Certhia genus that brown creepers belong to. It seems like the bill length is really the only way to tell the males and females apart. I am not sure what that is. Kind of sounded like maybe a pissed off crow? It also made me think of like a pissed off heron or egret too. Well, there's a Carolina wren belting his heart out right now. The bird noise is complemented by a helicopter flying overhead. Wow, what a great day for recording in the woods, you know, just springtime, all the birds are awake. The little like swampy water right next to me is just alive with frogs. Lots of butterflies flying around. It's wonderful. So as far as the range of these birds, they can be found throughout the U.S., but their breeding territory is pretty restricted. They specifically only breed in coniferous or mixed coniferous deciduous forests. That's because, as we'll talk about later, they rely on very specific species of trees with shaggy bark in order to make their nests. Oh my god, there's a woodpecker like right above me. I kind of got a look at it through the bone knocks. I'm pretty sure it was a hairy woodpecker. So the breeding territory of brown creepers aligns with where you find the coniferous and coniferous deciduous forests. So this is, you know, the northern U.S. stretching up into Canada, along the Pacific Northwest, reaching up into Alaska, down along the Rocky Mountains, and then also along the Appalachian Mountains going down into North Carolina. They also have a breeding population along the entire coast of California, and they actually stretch down throughout Mexico all the way to Honduras, basically following the Sierra Madre Occidental mountain range. They are semi-migratory, so during the winter they will move out of their breeding territory to feed in new areas. Sometimes this means just moving down a mountain slope. Other times it will mean they'll travel all the way from Canada to North Carolina. During the winter, they're a little less picky about what forests they feed in and can be found in deciduous forests. But they are forest birds, specifically of the deep forest. You're not going to find them in parks or on forest edges usually. They aren't often seen at backyard bird feeders because of this. You may see them, though, if you like live on a big stretch of forest. They might, you know, kind of venture out and come to your feeder. Usually these are birds of the deep woods. So first landing here, I have seen brown creepers. At my recording spot, actually, brown creeper has come by before. But I think at this point they've probably migrated to their breeding grounds, so I don't think we're going to see or hear any today. Their scientific name is Certhia americana. I don't think I need to explain the Americana part of their species name, but the genus name Certhia actually goes all the way back to Aristotle, who wrote in his Inquiries on Animals about a bird he called Curthios, which was a small bird, bold in behavior, who lived around trees and ate woodworms. Likely he was describing the Eurasian tree creeper here, a close relative of the brown creeper. And so that's how the genus name Certhia came about. Aristotle had it kind of right. They eat woodworms. I mean, they eat bugs that are found in the bark of trees, on the surface of barks of trees specifically. When they feed, a lot of times they're found in mixed flocks. Usually I see them at the very tail end of a mixed flock. So a mixed flock, you know, it's like a group of different species of birds that kind of move through the forest together. This is more often in the winter that birds will kind of clump together in these mixed flocks because they're just interested in feeding and surviving the winter. They're not, you know, trying to breed or defend territory. So you'll see, you know, them in mixed flocks with nuthatches, with woodpeckers, with titmice, with chickadees. And like, at least my experience, you know, usually the chickadees, it's titmice, they kind of lead the mixed flocks. I talk about this in my Nice Tits episode. And then, you know, the woodpeckers follow, the nuthatches follow. And at the tail end is the brown creeper. They're kind of like the caboose of the mixed flock. The white-breasted nuthatch, you know, like I mentioned, is often seen in mixed flocks with them, which is kind of cool because they also, feed in a similar way. They feed on, bugs and bug eggs that they can find in tree bark. You might think that these birds compete for food, but, if you know anything about nuthatches, observing them, nuthatches feed by going down trees, and brown creepers specialize in feeding by going up trees, the way woodpeckers do, but, you know, they don't peck, they just glean, they probe into the bark and find those eggs and gobble them up, and the insects and gobble them up. And it's kind of funny when you see them feed, like sometimes the nuthatches and the tree creepers will like pass each other. You know, the nuthatch is coming down, the brown creeper is coming up. They're like, hey, how you doing? You finding some bugs? Yep. you know, because they feed in different directions, they exploit different, you know, niches. They find insects in different areas that, you know, the other one wouldn't be able to find. Brown creepers, a specific kind of pattern that they'll do is they'll fly to the base of a tree and they'll start going up the tree in a spiral manner and go up, you know, usually up to kind of the crown of the tree and then fly off and go to the base of another tree. When they're going up the tree, they will use their tails like a third leg to prop themselves up. This behavior is called tail-supported climbing. And they do a lot of climbing. It's estimated that they climb several miles a day in total going up the trees. That's crazy. I think they'd beat any rock climber for sure. When I was researching in about brown creeper feeding behavior on the tree trunks of trees, it really made me realize that there's like a whole, you know, world, a whole little ecosystem on tree bark. They're basically like vertical cities. They contain a wide variety of insects, lichen, fungi, and mosses that are all like living together but eating each other. Like it's a whole ecosystem. It's so cool. I also learned a new word. Apparently in the world of botany, tree trunks are known as boles. That's B-O-L-E-S. And brown creepers are referred to as bole specialists. So, like I said, it's the crevices in the bark where they find the insects and insect eggs. Pretty much anything creeper crawly is on the menu, such as spiders, flies, beetles, stink bugs, ants, and flies. In winter, they will still mostly eat insects, but will also supplement their diet with some seeds. And like I said, they'll sometimes visit feeders too, and eat suet. And specifically, these are large diameter trees that they want to feed on. The little trees, that's not much bang for their buck. They want the big trees because, you know, if they're going to be climbing miles, they would rather do it on a big tree where they're more likely to find a lot of food, be able to cover, a wider amount of area as they climb. And also those big trees have very deep bark furrows that are going to house more insects. And that's pretty much what I got on their feeding. So let's talk about their breeding and social behavior. When they do their courtship, the male, you know, just how they go up the tree trunks in a spiral pattern, the male, when he does his courtship pursuit flights of his mate, he'll fly in a spiral pattern. They have a very unique nesting behavior. They primarily build their nests in the loose, flaking bark off of trees. You know how sometimes you see trees with real shaggy bark and it's kind of hanging off? This is especially true of like dead trees, you know, the bark is starting to peel off. Trees that tend to do this are the balsam fir and yellow birch. They will also use protruding bark left behind from tree snags to make their nests. And, you know, when you see like a tree branch or the top of a tree that is broken off, but it's still kind of hanging in there, like kind of a half snapped off, stick. That's what a snag is. And so they do a really cool thing. So they basically build a little hammock nest in the space created between the bark and the tree trunk, or, you know, the snag. And the rest of the tree or the branch. And it's basically a little cup-shaped nest that's suspended on the bark on one side and the surface of the tree trunk on the other side. No other bird in North America does anything like this. It's totally unique. Finding the perfect hammock nest spot can be tricky. And it seems like brown creepers will take whatever they can get once they find a site, whether it's only a foot off the ground or up 60 foot high in the canopy of the trees. So, I mean, you know, if you're in the breeding territory, during the spring and summer of this bird and you're walking around the woods and you see a tree with the shaggy bark, you know, maybe look around. You might catch that very unique hammock nest. Just don't disturb the little nestlings, okay? In Arizona, the population of brown creepers there has apparently developed a unique hammock design where the nest has two openings, one for entering and one for leaving. This is possibly a defense strategy to help the nest location remain obscure and hidden from predators. Really, remaining obscure is the brown creepers like number one strategy for avoiding predators. I mean, the adults, they blend in really well, they camouflage, and then this way that they nest in between the bark too, they're just trying to remain unseen. The female builds the nest over the course of 2 to 4 weeks while the male brings her material. She will layer twigs and strips of bark together, sticking them together with insect cocoons and spider egg casings to make her little hammock nest. They lay 5 to 6 eggs. It takes about 2 weeks for the eggs to hatch, and then about another 2 weeks for the nestlings to become fledged and ready to leave the nest. Like I said, these are birds of the deep forest. They like to make their nests deep in the forest away from forest edges. Studies have shown nests farther away from forest edges fledge more young, and likely this is because they avoid predators. The magic number appears to be about 100 meters into the forest where they start to, you know, have this decreased amount of fledglings lost to predators compared to nests that are closer to forest edges. So, I mean, 100 meters in. So, I mean, they need a substantial, you know, amount of forest to be able to breed successfully. Some bat species, including the Indiana bat, also use loose tree bark for roosting sites during the day. So there may be a little bit of bird-bat competition going on. This is suggested by one paper out of Eden County, Michigan, where, you know, they had observed some areas where Indiana bats were roosting in tree bark, and then they came back and a brown creeper nest had been made there, and the bats were gone. So they theorized that the brown creepers had evicted the bats. And during the wintertime, they may roost together on cold nights. When they do this, they do sort of a weird behavior. They will form a circle with their bills all pointing together and their tails facing out. I feel like if I stumbled across this, it would look like some weird bird ritual. I mean, I guess what they're doing is like kind of like keeping their backs to the wind or something, and trying to keep, you know, most of the heat towards their heads and the front of their bodies. Sort of like, you know, how penguins do that in Antarctica, where they form up in the circle. So let's talk about their vocalizations. I'll be honest, I feel like an idiot. I didn't even know that these birds sang. A lot of people talk about how, you know, they never see brown creepers, they only hear them. I'm sure I've heard brown creepers a million times and been like, I don't know what bird that is. I've definitely seen them a pretty good amount. I love seeing brown creepers. But researching this episode, I was like, oh man, I've been missing out on listening to their songs. Or I guess identifying their songs. Once you know their signature calls and song, it makes it much easier to identify this bird in the forest. Their song is only sung by the male and can be pretty variable. Similar to the song sparrow, apparently different populations will have different variations on their song. It appears that in adjacent areas, brown creeper populations might learn parts of their songs from each other. This is all based on an article I read from 2000 that recorded brown creepers throughout Washington and California and compared their songs. It was sort of funny reading this article. They refer to bits of songs that brown creepers learned from each other as memes. So, I mean, 2000, I think that was before a lot of internet culture. So maybe, you know, brown creepers, they're the ones that invented memes. Some people describe their song as sounding like trees, beautiful trees. And while only the male sings the song, both the male and females make a variety of calls. If involved in a territorial dispute, they will make an aggressive chatter call. They may accompany this with a threat display where they will hold up their body horizontal on a tree or branch, point their bill at their opponent, and hold their wings up high like a sail. They will give high-pitched communication calls back and forth while feeding. These actually sound a lot similar to the high-pitched tones of kinglets. They also make a tut call to warn of dangers, like from a cat or a hawk. I couldn't find a recording of this. And in the spring and summer when they're nesting, they are highly territorial. In that breeding season, they sing to maintain their breeding territory. And this breeding territory is actually pretty huge, about 5 to 15 acres, which is, you know, nuts for such a small bird. But I guess, you know, they need a lot of big trees to feed on to support the nest. So they need a lot of land. I mean, that's just a lot to defend, though. I found a study out of Canada that suggested brown creepers need about 11 hectares or 27 acres of undisturbed forest in order to successfully reproduce. So you can see why these birds are extremely sensitive to logging. Apparently even selective logging practices are pretty bad for them. This is because usually in selective logging, they will just, you know, take down large diameter trees, like big mature trees, and leave a lot of the other smaller trees. And, you know, it's good. They're not, you know, clear cutting the forest. They're leaving something. But those large diameter trees are what the brown creepers rely on. There was a study out of Algonquin Park, Canada, that found a 42% reduction in brown creeper density in a forest after it was partially logged. It seems like if narrow forest strips less than 8 meters wide are made, such as for telephone lines, gas lines, or roads, these don't appear to really cause any negative effects to brown creepers. Just to, you know, reinforce how important, you know, mature trees are to brown creepers, I found a study out of Idaho in 2013 that used LIDAR. Basically, it's like radar, but they use lasers to look at canopy density and then correlated it with brown creeper population density. And, you know, as expected, dense forest canopies were associated with higher populations of brown creepers. As far as, you know, more natural threats to them, so... typical songbird predators like, falcons, hawks will go after brown creepers, but not really a ton, you know. They're got a small size and they got a lot of camouflage, so, you know, it's not a lot of bang for the buck for the predators to go after them. But shrikes, you know, they are small enough that shrikes can feed on them. When brown creepers sense danger, they will press their belly tight up against the bark of the tree, and also spread out their wings to basically become one with the tree, you know. They spread out their wings, they press their belly in, just trying to get as flat as possible on that tree and just look like a piece of bark. And they're really good at this, too. I read one account where a brown creeper who did this remained entirely motionless for about 10 minutes, and it was extremely hard to relocate the brown creeper when the observer would, like, you know, glance away. They would look back and be like, where the hell did it go? And then have to look around for a while before they were like, oh okay, there it is. There's a little frog in the water, like, right next to me, kind of looking up at me. The biggest mortality for brown creepers occurs for nestlings and eggs, and this is from rodents. They are pretty much the biggest predator of eggs and nestlings for brown creepers, squirrels especially. I mean, this makes sense. You know, squirrels are running up the tree trunks of trees, and they look down and, you know, see a little brown creeper hammock with some eggs or some nestlings in it. I mean, that's a quick meal right there. Gray squirrels, red squirrels, and northern flying squirrels are all potential predators of their nests. Wood rats and deer mice also prey on their nests. Because rodents are their major predators, years where there is a bad mast crop, meaning not a lot of nuts and seeds are produced by trees, this may make the squirrels and mice and rats, you know, more hungry and needing to seek out alternative food sources. And so these may be especially high years of predation for brown creeper nests. And I did see that in studies that looked at, like, the populations of brown creepers over the years, sort of noticed a bit of a boom and a bust cycle. But I didn't see any formal study that, like, actually looked at mast crop and brown creeper populations. That is an area of potential future research. I did find a study that found predation was higher on nests made on non-native trees compared to native trees. This was from two studies that compared nests made on non-native spruce plantations compared to natural forest stands. And this one's kind of a weird predator, but I did find one account where a praying mantis attacked and ate a brown creeper. This is crazy. But it does show just how small these birds are that a praying mantis could feed on it. This was an extreme situation, though. This brown creeper had been incapacitated in a mist net. These are nests that bird banders and researchers use to safely catch birds. I actually encountered a mist netter randomly one time. I was hiking with my wife up at New River Gorge in West Virginia, America's newest national park. It's awesome up there. Definitely check it out. But anyway, we were hiking and we kind of like saw a little side path and kind of walked on it a little bit. You know, I was birding as I always am. And I found all these mist nets set up. I kind of looked around and then found a dude chilling at a table and started talking with him. And he let us go out with him to check the mist nets. Unfortunately, there weren't any birds. We were kind of at midday. The best time, you know, is in the morning and evenings for mist netting. But it was really cool. Basically he would go every 15 minutes to check these mist nets so that when the birds are caught, you know, they're not too stressed for too long, and they can be banded and then released. Unfortunately, in this story, the researchers weren't quick enough to release this brown creeper from the mist net. And by the time that they got to it, it was being eaten by a praying mantis. The praying mantis was feasting on his right wing and had exposed it all the way down to the bone. The good news is that this bird did eventually recover and was released back into the wild. And although these brown creepers are small, they are mighty. They will assist other birds with mobbing nest predators like crows, jays, and chipmunks. Their population is estimated at 11 million, and it actually has slightly increased between 1966 and 2019. Dutch elm disease, spruce budworm, and gypsy moss, now called spongy moss, by the way, have actually benefited brown creepers by causing more trees to die and thus creating good nesting habitat for brown creepers. The spruce budworm is native. Dutch elm disease, as you can guess from the name, is a non-native fungus. And then spongy moss are also non-native. What episode do I talk about them? I think in my cuckoo episode, I tell their story. Beech bark disease also creates dead trees and benefits brown creepers. Beech bark disease is really cool, actually. I won't talk about it in depth, but basically it occurs due to a two-hit punch from both an insect and a fungus. The exact mechanism of how this happens is unknown, but both must be present in order for the disease to happen. The disease involves huge cankers and lesions forming on the tree that basically just, like, you know, stop it being able to send nutrients and kill it. The insect involved is the beech scale insect, while the two fungi involved are native and are from the Neonectria genus. The beech scale insect is non-native. It's an invasive species. The oldest known brown creeper was 5 years, 5 months old when it was recaptured during banding operations in Illinois in 2010. So, you know, they might have kind of short lifespans for birds. You know, most of our songbirds are about 10-year lifespans. But again, there hasn't been a ton of research on them, and it sounds like they're probably hard to band. You know, I don't know how much you're actually going to catch a brown creeper based on, you know, how they like to be in the deep forest. People usually aren't doing a lot of mist netting in the deep forest. All right, y'all, let's wrap up with the evolutionary history of these birds. I won't go too much into the deep evolutionary roots of tree creepers because I do touch on this in both my brown-headed nuthatch and my Carolina wren episode because they are both distant relatives of tree creepers. Their roots lie in the Austroavis radiation coming out of Australia and the surrounding South Asian islands. Specifically, the clade of birds that tree creepers belong to is called Certhioidae. It's a superfamily that contains tree creepers, nuthatches, wall creepers, wrens, and gnatcatchers. Obviously, the common ancestor of these three groups was a bird that could cling well to vertical surfaces. Wall creepers evolved to specialize on clinging to rock faces, while nuthatches and tree creepers specialized on trees. They just, you know, point in opposite directions when they feed, as we talked about. The link with wrens and gnatcatchers, you know, doesn't seem very obvious at first, but when you observe these birds in the field, you know, they're little birds and they'll cling to all kinds of surfaces, hang upside down on vines, so then it starts to make a little more sense. But the evolutionary history of tree creepers is a little murky and complicated, so I can't give a ton of specifics here. I'm using a couple papers and my research from past episodes to help me kind of fill in the gaps and, you know, make my own hypothesis, as always. A big help was a paper out of China in 2022 that did DNA analysis on some members of this group, including the brown creeper, to try to figure out the most likely relationships. The closest relative to the tree creeper group is a very similar looking bird called the Indian spotted creeper. While it looks a lot like tree creepers, it acts more like a nuthatch. It actually feeds by going down head first on trees. This may indicate that the common ancestor of this clade fed more like a nuthatch going down trees, while the behavior of going up trunks in that spiral manner evolved specifically with the tree creepers. The ancestral origins of tree creepers may be out of South Asia, specifically West Central Nepal, where the highest species density occurs. Species density is a bit of a problematic way to predict, the origin of a group of birds. I think I talked about this in my woodpecker episode. So, you might think, there's the most species of a bird in a group of birds in this certain area. This is probably where they started. But the thing is sometimes, a bird group will start in an area and then it'll spread somewhere else and there's just a lot of niches to fill. So then it'll speciate, it'll form a lot of different species. So it can be a little bit misleading, but it's one of the tools that we use to try to predict the origin of where a bird came when we have very limited information. The earliest tree creeper fossil was discovered in Europe and dates from the early Miocene about 20 million years ago. This is a leg bone and was found in Bavaria, Germany. It has distinctive trochlei on it that serve as attachments for the specialized muscles that allow birds of the Cirtheodiae clade to cling to vertical surfaces. And this shows that this clinging to vertical surfaces behavior had evolved as far back as 20 million years ago. So we know that at least 20 million years ago, a tree creeper ancestor existed. This ancestor likely had the same evolutionary traits seen in all tree creepers today that allow them to be trunk feeding specialists. As I mentioned earlier, tree creepers' feeding strategy is termed tail-supported climbing. Tree creeper leg muscles are shortened compared anatomically to other birds, allowing them to crouch close to tree bark. Their toes are also very long and very strong in flexing or closing, which means they are perfect for clinging to rough bark. And finally, their tails are short and very stiff, allowing them to act like a board to prop the bird up. This may make you think of another bird with tail-supported climbing, woodpeckers. When you observe them feeding, brown creepers and woodpeckers do really look a lot alike as they go up trees. But as you know from my woodpecker episode, they come from an entirely different evolutionary line. Their closest relative is actually toucans. So this tail-supported feeding is actually a result of convergent evolution. The Himalayan tree creeper seems to be the most basal ancestor of the tree creepers. It likely specialized to the mountain Himalayan environments, while the other ancestral tree creepers remained more generalized and, kind of spread around the world and then became the species we see today. The next split came between our brown creeper and the ancestor of the short-tailed tree creeper and the Eurasian tree creeper. This almost certainly occurred when a population of this ancestral, more generalist tree creeper species made it across the Bering Strait to colonize the Americas and become the brown creeper. There's some argument about how many subspecies exist of the brown creeper. I've seen listed anywhere from 4 to 13 subspecies. These subspecies have distinct morphological and genetic and mitochondrial DNA differences from each other. I'm a lumper, not a splitter, so I'm not going to describe, this in detail. I'm just going to go into the four main subtypes that I found. These are the southern subspecies, which ranges from Arizona to Honduras, the western subspecies, which resides west of the Rockies and the western U.S. and Canada. There's a Pacific subspecies, which is along the Pacific coast, and the eastern subspecies, which resides in the eastern U.S. and eastern Canada. The southern subspecies, sometimes also called the Mexican creeper, is the most distinctly different, with almost black plumage. And this black plumage blends real well into the darker bark of subtropical pines. It's estimated that the southern subspecies first separated from the western and eastern around 1.5 million years ago, while the eastern and western didn't diverge until about 600,000 years ago. These subspecies appear to not breed with each other much at all. There is one area in the Rincon Mountains of southern Arizona where the Rocky Mountain brown creeper and the Sierra Madre Occidental brown creeper subspecies appear to hybridize. And how did these subspecies form? Well, if you've listened to my show before, you probably already know how it happened. It's all due to the
last glacial maximum.
I've talked about the last glacial maximum so much in this show. Basically, the gist of it is most modern bird subspecies and even a few species evolved in North America during the Pleistocene epoch, which dated from about 5 million years ago to 10 to 20,000 years ago. It was marked by periods of advancing and retreating glaciers. It basically ended with the last glacial maximum, the last height of glacial advance, about 20,000 years ago. During periods of glacial advance, populations get split and separated, and also forced to survive in glacier-free areas. These are called refugia. It's interesting because on both sides of the U.S., the last glacial maximum sort of had opposite effects for brown creepers. In the east, glaciers swept down along the Appalachian Mountains, making it more of an alpine landscape that wasn't great for brown creepers. A paper I read out of the Auk published in 2014 found some genetic evidence to suggest that there were two major areas of refugia for brown creepers during this period, one in North Carolina and one in Louisiana. In the west, southwest, and Mexico, the story was different. The glacial maximum brought more moisture to this area and helped support forests and habitat for brown creepers. As the glaciers retreated, desert began to take back over, and the brown creeper population became more fragmented to islands of forested habitat. In Monterey County of California and the Sierra Madre Occidental of Mexico, brown creeper populations there show evidence that they underwent a significant bottleneck, where large numbers of the population died off, leaving just a few birds left who, when they reproduced, left a big genetic footprint on the creepers that exist there today. There's enough difference in some of the subspecies of brown creeper plumage and vocalizations and distinct genetic markers that there may be separate species of brown creepers in the Americas. Again, this all depends on whether you're a lumper or a splitter. So that's all I got on brown creepers, you guys. I hope you learned something. I hope you appreciate these cryptic birds, possibly underappreciated birds, but that are super cool and have such a cool role in the forest. And when you see them, I guess it's a sign that, you know, you're in the deep woods, that this is a large enough forest to support them. Well, thanks you guys for listening. Please write in. It helps me, stay energized for making more episodes. Let me know what you want to hear. Thanks for joining me on this beautiful spring day in First Landing State Park. And as always, stay dirty, fellow birdies.
Dirty Bird Podcast is brought to you by me, John, with my rotating panel of guests and co-hosts. Thanks for being on the show, everybody. The Dirty Bird theme song is by Ricky Pistone. Check out his groovy and hilarious music videos on YouTube. The outro music you're listening to right now is a song, New York Redneck, by the Sidewalk Slammers. Check them out wherever you get your music. The Dirty Bird Podcast logo is by the very talented TJ Ranosky. And of course, a shout out to my beautiful wife, Lauren, who created my original logo. Check out the show notes for this episode for a full list of credits for any bird calls or sounds used in the episode. Thanks for listening.
truck in the back, and I like the New York Mets and my cowboy hats. My dream.